You're listening to Mix and Match with Mumby, and I'm delighted to say we have a very special guest joining us in the studio, Mr. Andy Hayes, who is the director of the latest Interact project, Money Can't Buy Love. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you.
Thank you very much for coming on the programme.
It's a pleasure, true pleasure.
Yes, so we're going to be talking for the next 40 minutes. We're going to be talking about the show, we're going to be talking about the individual playwrights, and towards the end, towards about quarter two, we'll just be giving listeners a rough idea of where the play's going to be touring, because you're taking it around Northumberland, aren't you?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, so I suppose the first question is, for people who aren't familiar with the project, which premiered at the Playhouse couple of weeks ago, what is the Interact project?
The Interact project is a scheme set up by Northumberland Theatre Company, where it gives the opportunity to young talent of the region, the opportunity to work in a professional environment for the year, and then at the end of it showcase their own talents by doing a show for play. It's just an absolute fantastic opportunity if you're a local talent, actor, director, stage manager, designer. It really, really is. I mean, I've worked with Northern Stage, the Nuffield, and NTC, and that really, really set me up and gave me the confidence to be able to direct foreplay.
So did you become involved in this? You've just talked about your kind of brief experience beforehand. Is this, particularly with the case of direction, is this something that was it a natural step up, or was it more of a kind of impulse thing of think this is the thing I want to do?
A bit of both, actually. I mean, when I was at university, I started off by acting, mm-hmm. and realised that wasn't really I didn't really enjoy it. I was more aware of everything else that was going on around me.
Worrying about everything else.
Yeah, worrying about it, exactly. So the third year, for my final year, I did directing, and then I heard about this amazing course, Interact, and just joined. So I would honestly advise anybody to apply. Applications are now being taken.
For the next intake.
Yeah, for the next intake of Interactors. So please, if you're an actor, stage manager, designer, or director, just get your application in. It's paid work for you, and you really, really can't say no to it.
Right. We're going to talk in detail about the individual plays, because it's a show of four one-act, half-hour plays,
yep.
and we're going to be talking about each one in turn to give the writers their dues. But there is a kind of there are a series of common threads between them all, aren't you? So can you give people who want to go and see this show a kind of brief synopsis of what sort of thing they can expect?
It's really just what originally it started off with was the idea of recession and how it affects people around, how the recessions affect people, but it's turned out to be more about relationships and people's views taken to the extreme, and people just sort of trying to find the right job that suits them by doing a mismatch of jobs. it's basically about people's relationships though, and couples, and how they digress, and how they keep the strength, and really that's the real theme behind it.
It does. I mean, it's one of those things which, in the way that you describe it, it's relevant theatre, mm-hmm. in the sense that if people hear a show like that described in that way, they will think, oh, well, this is something that could actually speak to me, and mm-hmm. it's not just some kind of left-field art there, outy stuff, which is fine, but I take it that's not what Interact is for.
No, it was really just because of the times is really what we wanted to do, something that's relevant, that really holds the audience's attention, and some audiences might be going through the same problems that the issues that the plays delve into,
mm-hmm.
so it's sort of an out for them as well.
Okay. Was it always your intention to direct, or did you apply for several roles?
No, always my intention to direct. Over the masterclasses that you do on Interact is really showing me that direction was the right way to go. Not saying I was a bad actor, but it's really is my passion, and really enjoy doing it, and I couldn't fault it in the world. Wouldn't want to change.
So you just mentioned about the kind of the masterclasses. So it's not all focused around actually putting the production together.
No. When you first start off, just really to get to know who you work with, the actors and stage managers and etc., is they do masterclasses with Theatre Complicity, improvisation, comedy. John Wright came in to do a couple of masterclasses with us. Some really big, well-known people in the industry come and help you train so you get more knowledge and more confidence with how you perform and look at different techniques of performing and directing.
And did you get on well with the cast? I mean, because of the way the application process works, I don't think you had a say about who you were going to be working with. Were there any kind of, I mean, obviously we won't mention any individuals, but were there any disagreements? Was it difficult to kind of break the ice, or did you all just throw yourself into it?
I think that, yeah, exactly, that's what we did. We all threw ourselves into it. And with the sort of not having to to start the production at the start of the year, we sort of just took them opening 2 weeks just to get to know each other. Because I mean, we were all eight new people in a new scenario. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we really took the time to get to know each other, and I say that really helped us and strengthened us when we came to do the show. We understood what each other wanted, and we were willing to take time and listen to each other's ideas, which I feel is very important as a director, that the cast feel comfortable with each other.
Yeah. Andy Hayes is still with us in the studio. Well, we're talking about the foreplay project, Money Can't Buy Love, which is run by the Northumberland Theatre Company through the Interact project. And we started off just giving a brief synopsis about what the plays are about in terms of themes, and laying out what the project is for and how Andy got involved with it. So now we're going to move on to the plays individually. We're going to talk about the first two now, and then we'll talk about the second lot.
Sounds good.
So I'd like to start with play number one, which is The Ballad of Minnie and Doxa.
Yeah.
Give us, for each one, just give us a brief plot synopsis to start off with.
Well, The Ballad of Minnie and Doxa is about a couple. Essentially, it's about a couple who start off quite strong, and then it just shows their relationship slowly digressing until the end, where they split and mm-hmm. leave each other. And this is all around...
Is that a plot spoiler?
Pardon?
Is that a plot spoiler?
Not really, no. I think it's very much obvious towards the start that that's what's going to happen. No, I don't think I've really...
Fair enough. Carry on.
Spoiled it. Yeah. And it's just sort of about the chorus who get involved with each the scene playing Doxa's mates and Minnie's girlfriends, mm-hmm. who think they're giving right advice, but they're actually not, and they're really meddling.
Yeah, it's interesting that you use the word chorus, because one of the things about this is that it's told in a kind of... I mean, Rosalind Hazlitt's script is a kind of interesting mix. If you've got the realistic, natural, pub-like dialogue of all the mates... there's a wonderful joke which we can't broadcast on air because it has sexual connotations. Yeah. It's too early in the afternoon. But there is a combination of that and then this kind of cabaret-like segue with the repeated musical number.
Mm-hmm.
Was that interesting to kind of coordinate? I mean, how did you go about making the two seamless?
It didn't really seem... It didn't start off as a cabaret. It wasn't sort of our original intentions. We were originally just going to have it in rhyme, sort of very old-school chorus.
Right.
And we decided that we would be a bit more contemporary with it and turn it into a song.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed to work a lot better, especially with these two naturalistic characters of Minnie and Doxa. And to have these heightened chorus members around, so you understood that it was the chorus that were in the scenes, it really, really helped it, and it just made the play sort of flow a lot better and make it more interesting for an audience member to watch.
It is the gentlest of the four, I think, in terms of its subject matter, and it isn't massively contentious, although I have to say I massively enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of actually... rehearsing it then.
Yeah.
What kind of techniques did you use when you were putting it together?
Rehearsing it was a really a joy to do. We started off by trying to turn the chorus parts into song. So we spent a full day really looking at that, putting it to certain beats like the Ballad of Frankie and Johnny, and using different songs to see if we could get the beat to go with anything else. But in the end, we couldn't.
So it wasn't a case of standing around a piano and...
Oh, no, not at all. It was a lot of hard work of going over different songs, seeing if we could make it fit, songs that people would recognize as well. And we found that Frankie and Johnny really worked. So what we decided to do was turn it staccato, speak some bits of it and then sing some bits just to make it more interesting so it didn't get too repetitive. And then what I found was really important was to allow the chorus members especially to have a lot of fun with it, sort of come up with little movements themselves and just point them in the right direction of it, I felt was really important. And really allow them to find their own characters as individuals but then as a group.
Mm-hmm.
But then really work with them on it as well.
Was it your idea to have the device of the bow ties and the hats to show the different changing of the groups?
Yeah, that was something the designer Anna came up with, which was an absolute fantastic idea. Something so quick and sleek, but so effective mm-hmm. at the same time. It really, really, really helped a lot. And I mean, all the praises to the world for her for coming up with that.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant idea.
We're going to come back to her set design later on when we're going to talk about Gridlocked, because that's the most set designy one of the four.
Yep.
And I have to say the one which I thought was best, but more of that later. Let's move on to Breaking Point.
And okay.
It is a bit of a leap, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
So this is about marriage counselling, or is it?
Yes, in some retrospects it is about marriage counselling.
We have to tread carefully because this
is... We do, I know, I realise that, and I think we should stay along the marriage counsellor route and let the audiences go and see it themselves, where it leads. I thought it was just fantastic that the role of Elaine, somebody who's quite very insecure, but yeah. portrays herself as very confident.
Yeah, I think we've jumped ahead a bit, so it's... A couple
had a problem, an issue. Yeah. Sorry, jumping ahead.
Right.
A couple having an issue, problem, which you will have to go and see the show to figure out, to find out what it is.
Yeah.
Who go and see a counsellor who counsels out of a village hall.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously not very professional, and she takes a liking to the lead guy.
Yes, that's
and
good
it just
way of putting
it's all downhill from there. Well, you'll have to go and see it to find out what happens.
Because in the way, although. It is, no, the story is about trying to put a relationship back together, and it is about insecurity,
yeah.
and it is about and a kind of inferiority issue,
mm-hmm.
whether it's, you know, psychological inferiority or anything else. In a way, there's a kind of undercurrent in Paddy Campbell's script about the kind of double standards towards, in inverted commas, mumbo-jumbo cures,
mm-hmm.
these different spiritual treatments who compete for people's money. There's a wonderful moment there's a running joke throughout it where the therapist, Elaine,
yes.
Comes into the hall and finds a yoga class in her way and shoos them away and shows her intelligence and her kind of qualification by lining the wall with pointless certificates.
Yeah.
As to say, you know, I've got this official, I've got these qualifications, therefore I'm better than you at dealing
yeah.
with these people's needs.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And, because there is a kind of fatal attraction-like thread going through it as well. I mean, again, we have to be careful not to give
yeah.
anything away or say anything that we shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean... I think Josie Cerise's performance in that is astonishing.
Oh,
how did you get that out of her?
It was fun. Really, all the love in the world for Josie. She worked really hard at it, and we worked really hard together on it. How we got the performance was really we just tried different ideas, different scenarios with her, and put her did a lot of hot seating when she was younger,
mm-hmm.
to see why has she turned out this way, and that sort of helped to a degree. And then the idea behind she comes in with a different certificate every day,
mm-hmm.
you know, just printed off the internet. Yes, that's me qualified. We found that we really needed for her to believe it 100%.
Yes.
That this is what she was made to do. I mean, she's had thousands of jobs previous to this,
mm-hmm.
and this is what she was meant to do, be a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And we really found that the character of Elaine really came when she started believing in herself that she was a therapist, 100% believed
yes.
it.
Was the whole, because there is a mention of her relationship with her father, which is a kind of Elektra complex. Was that
yeah.
something that came out of the hot seating, or was that in the script?
That came out of hot seating.
Right.
That came out of hot seating. Paddy sort of touched on it, and during workshops with the writers, a lot of this thing, like the yoga scenes, came out of it, and mm. the relationship with her dad came out with it. Sort of, her dad never really backed her up on anything. She was daddy's little girl. He was always there to give her money. And sort of never had belief in her, just always thought she's going to be there, I'm going to have to continue paying.
Yes, and it is a wonderful, I mean, we're kind of describing it as if it's very twisted and weird, but it is a black comedy at
yeah.
heart, isn't it?
Yes.
And people shouldn't be afraid to laugh at it.
Oh, no, definitely don't be afraid to laugh. This is the one piece out of the four where you've fully got license to laugh at every single line that comes out of any character's mouth.
Yes. And I dare say if people have had, you know, counselling of any kind, then it will strike it near the bone, shall we say. Will it appeal to them if that's happened, or will it be so close that they will find it uncomfortable?
I don't think it'll make them feel uncomfortable. I think it'll make heightened whatever counselling they've been through. Sort of, we looked at a lot of like what counselling methods are like, how they sit at the edge of the table.
Mm-hmm.
Speak to you like that, speak to you on your level. And we've really just heightened everything that a normal counsellor would do. So don't think people would find it awkward. They would just see the funny side. Just see the funny side of what counsellors do, do you know what I mean? And
yes,
that's
exactly.
sort of, and then this sort of Elaine by herself is not really representing counsellors all around.
Yes.
She's representing herself as a new in the industry and just copying people's methods.
Yes.
And trying different remedies to yes. get this fixed.
What was it? There's a brilliant line, and it's something where she's trying out a new treatment with, the husband saying, I picked this technique up from a Tibetan monk whom I met in
Hartlepool.
And I just laughed my head off at that. Andy Hayes is still joining me for the next 10-15 minutes. We've got a lot to get through, so we best crack on.
Yeah.
We've already talked about the Battle of Dominion Doxa and Breaking Point, so now we need to talk about He's Coming.
He's Coming.
And what happens in He's Coming?
He's Coming, I mean, the tone just totally changes. We've set you up with two fantastic comedies, well, sort of light comedies and then a black comedy, and then this really just is the complete opposite. It's about a single mother, Andrea, who's been, in the past, been viciously beaten by her partner, Stephen, who is being released on Christmas Eve, so on a time where we should be happy and jolly, she's just stricken with the fear that this Stephen's going to come back. And I mean, her sister comes around and really shows her support, and that's really about what the story is about. It's just sort of him, the start of it especially, is really about, is he going to turn up, is he going to come, and then he does.
Yeah, I mean, the dynamic of it, because it is the most intimate in a way, because it's just three characters, and it's two men and two women and a man,
yeah.
Which obviously hints back to something like Sartre's No Exit, in which it's two women and a man trapped in this room, which turns out to be hell.
Mm.
And it's the whole thing of they all hate each other, but none of them feels the ability to leave.
Yeah.
Was that an influence on you, or was it something you weren't aware of?
I sort of have heard of it, but it wasn't really a big influence on me. It was just sort of that feeling of being trapped is definitely something that we wanted to explore, because though her sister always had the opportunity to leave, she didn't want to leave them alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, Andrea didn't want her to leave, but she doesn't want him to leave. And it's sort of that being trapped in this space. And that's what I feel, we really got this feel of tension and this fear from the character of Andrea, but and fear from her sister as well. Although she was being very, very confident in the way she spoke to Steve, being very, very upfront and very threatening towards him. Mm-hmm. She would want to explore her fear as well.
Would you class this as like a kitchen sink drama?
Yeah.
Along the lines of someone like Mike Leigh or Ken Loach's work? Because
yeah.
it there is that same sense of desperation and the fact that these people have nowhere else to go.
Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. Very, very much so. I mean, there was no other way to do this.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be very natural. And then if we tried to heighten it at all, it would have been ruined. It wouldn't have had the strength that it did.
Mm.
And then, I mean, Mike Lee's always been quite an influence on me as
well.
You've
got the kind of Mike Leigh beard going.
Yeah,
to an
I know.
Extent. Not quite as grey as Lee's.
No, I haven't got the age behind it, but I will sometime. Will someday.
Yes. We shall see in 30 years' time.
Yeah,
we
should.
So in terms of the rehearsals approach, because you've talked about hot seating for Breaking Point, mm-hmm. and getting that intensity and that sort of satirical edge.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, you must have gone in the complete opposite direction. Everything was downplayed.
Downplayed, yes, but we still had to use the same sort of techniques. Sort of hot seating was very, very important to get into the mindset. I mean, none of them have been abused before, been the abuser before. So it's really hard to get into that mindset and do the roles justice. So we had to do a lot of hot seat and really took our time with how Andrea would move and how she would react to certain little things. And that really comes across in their play every time he goes to reach above his neck.
Yeah, because there is a moment at the start of the play where it's just Andrea on stage in mm-hmm. near darkness. And she's just making those little fidgety movements of herself, not really knowing what to do with herself. And you can feel how tense it is.
Yeah.
And I take my hat off to you, because it is very hard to do tension when you've only got one person on the stage. So presumably if you were hot seating, you would have, because there are hints in the plot synopsis in the programme and in the play itself that this is not the first time that Stephen has gone to prison. So did you work out his kind of, like, how many times has he offended? Is this?
No, I didn't feel that was really. It was really to get what was difficult with Stephen. What wasn't so difficult was really to find this man that who believed he had changed,
mm-hmm.
but he actually hadn't. That was the important thing. It wasn't. We knew the act he had done and how horrific it was and how bad tempered he could be. We just really needed to get that anger up to that level, which took a bit of time with Stephen. And then, but what we had to make it believable is that he 100%. Believed he had changed and he was right for her and the baby George.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So we'll move straight on to Gridlocked, and this is the strangest one of the four.
Yes, very much so.
It's written by, we should have mentioned actually, the writer of He's Coming, Laura Degnan.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and Gridlock by Kim Spence, who seems to have... I mean, she's got an MA in creative writing, from what I read in the programme.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the way that I would have described this after watching it was kind of Twin Peaks meets Soylent Green with a bit of Tideland in the middle.
Mm.
Is that a fitting description?
I think it's a fair description, yes. It was very... it was the most enjoyable to do, let's say. I mean... I don't want to give too much away about it. It's hard to go into this without giving it. It's sort of...
Let's set the characters up.
Grid, weird name, is a lady, schizophrenic, who's a monk who believes she's a monk who's taken over a church, who's a very much environmentalist, believes in recycling. I mean, this is really to the extreme of recycling. I don't want to say...
Involving, shall we say, human recycling.
Yeah, human recycling. Good, in a sense, yes. And Leek, who's a character who's recently lost, or has she lost her brother, who goes to the church looking for a tile, which was a memento from when they were a child, and she's sort of trapped as Grid's locked her in and trying to change her view on how on recycling and stuff like that. And Grid, actually, I don't believe... Yeah, she's a fascinating character. I mean, really fascinating. And the contrast between her and Leek is such a great deal.
Yeah.
I mean, Leek's very naturalistic in this beautiful heightened character that
is bouncing off the walls.
Yeah, and absolutely insane.
Yes,
it's probably the best.
Out of the four, I think that this is the one that would work most if you chose to extend it. I don't know whether that's something you'd want to do, having done this project, or whether Kim would be up for it.
Yeah.
But it's, again, you've talked about this, you said this was the most fun to do, in the sense that you could be as big as you wanted.
Yes.
But it's not necessarily a comedy in the way that Breaking Point is.
No.
There are funny moments in it. I mean, it's
not intently meant to be a comedy. It's not meant to be, there's a joke, let's put that in. It's just the portrayal that Louise has of this character. And I mean, there's something that Louise has been gifted with is this Alice has been gifted with this great comedic timing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened that how we created this character for her and the role, the way it sort of went, it was hard to find it. I think you laugh because you're a bit uncomfortable by it. You're surprised by the fact that somebody could be this outrageous. And I think that's why where the laughs come. I don't think it's because she's doing anything particular. Yeah. That's great.
Exactly.
It's sort of, oh my God, she's mental.
Because there is that Lynchian thing in Blue Velvet and in Twin Peaks where, you know, which are very much about voyeurism and the power of dreams and, you know, is this fantasy, is it reality?
Mm-hmm.
In which you do laugh uncomfortably in the scenes with Dennis Hopper or in the scenes with the Red Room because it's like, part of me doesn't want to be here, but I'm so mesmerized by what's going on that I can't look away. And you do let out a slightly awkward laugh, even when there's kind of horrors going on in front of you. And I think you captured that extraordinarily well.
Yeah. And then I think Louise and Nicola, who are both in it.
Yes.
Sorry, I keep saying Louise. Alice and Nicola, who are in it, do a fantastic job of that. And the contrasting characters is very, very, was so important and integral to the piece.
And again,
for that to happen.
We don't want to give too much away, but the twist at the end.
We don't want to give too much away.
Yeah, there is a twist somewhere along the line, which
you need to come and see it, is what I'm going to say.
Yeah. So we should do that now, because I know, like I said, we're pressed for time.
Yeah.
It was at the Playhouse on April 8th and 9th.
Yes.
And so if you're an Alnwick resident, you've missed the nearest viewing, but where can we see the production next? Where are you taking it?
We've just finished at Scarborough.
Mm-hmm.
So on the 27th of April at 7:30, we're at the Middlesbrough Town Hall at the Crypt.
Mm-hmm.
And then Thursday the 29th of April, we're at the Malton Theatre in Berwick.
Right.
And then Friday the 7th of May, we're at the Arts Centre, Washington. And then Monday the 10th of May and Tuesday the 11th of May we're at the Customs House in South Shields.
And then you finish up on the Northern Stage.
Yes, we're at Northern Stage. Thursday, Friday and Saturday are the 13th, 14th and 15th of May. And Thursday, Friday, Saturday of the 20th, 21st and 22nd of May at Northern Stage. And then we finish, unfortunately.
Then you can rest.
Rest, but it's going to be a sad, sad, sad thing to let go, especially with it being my first major piece.
Yeah. I suppose there's a couple of questions I have left following on from that. I mean, from what we've described, there's a lot of different things going on and there's a lot of different things on offer. So there isn't really anyone out there whom the show isn't for.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody who feels
exactly.
It's,
and that's what we felt was very important, especially with us being new artists on the scene. We felt we had to cater for every audience and make sure that we were seen by everybody. And I mean, that just draws up interest in many different ways for us as by agents.
It is an adults only piece, though. I mean,
yes, oh yes, definitely. I wouldn't say anybody under under the age of 12, 13 would really be appropriate.
Yeah.
But I mean, just for in case adult people wise, were
wondering,
yes,
if they could do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, like you say, it's going to be hard after this all finishes. But what do you hope to do next?
I hopefully will be working as a, hopefully get a job as a touch wood, as an associate director somewhere. I mean, that's my dream. I don't want to start my own theatre company. I feel I'm too young.
Yeah.
And I would love to stay in the region. I mean, there's a lot of actors and talent out there in the Newcastle area, in the northeast region, that I feel really should be discovered. And Interact certainly does that. So please, please, I can't stress enough, apply if you're an actor, designer, stage manager, director. I mean, Gillian Hambleton, who's the artistic director of NTC, has been such a help. And I mean, me as a director have really developed under her wing. I mean, she's got the time for you. And so does the rest of the production team there. Ben Steppenbeck and Michelle.
Yeah.
They're just absolutely fantastic. And Hillary.
Yeah. We should just mention briefly the old Curiosity Shop.
Oh, yes, of course. The old Curiosity Shop, which is coming in September and October, is obviously by Charles Dickens, and it's been adapted for the stage by Stuart Housen. It's going to be an absolute
is
fantastic
this an NTC
piece.
Production?
It's an NTC production. Right. It's going to be an absolutely fantastic piece. So please get yourself there over September and October and go and see it.
Remind, I mean, Gillian, where is it coming again?
Pardon?
Which
it's coming to the Annick Playhouse,
right?
In September. I don't have the date on me, but it's definitely in September. Please go and watch it. Gillian never ever fails to put on a good show, so please go and see it.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Andy.